Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 67. I'm recording it on Wednesday, December 31st, 2008. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is, First, Valuations Don't Matter at All. Then, They Matter Big Bunches. Then, They Don't Matter at All Again. The idea for the podcast is most of them are prompted by something I see either at a discussion board or a website in the morning when I'm making my rounds. And then the idea for that podcast pops into my head and I scribble down some notes. And after I finish checking up on things going on in the world, I come upstairs and record a podcast. And there was a guy who posted a letter at John Walter Russell's site that I saw this morning. I like to mention the address of John's site from time to time because it's so important. If you listen to these podcasts, you're listening to words from a words guy. I'm not a numbers guy. But all of the research backing up those words is presented at John Walter Russell's site. So if you find value in these podcasts, you have to go and look at the research. The research is at early-retirement-planning-insights.com. But the best section of the research at John's site is absolutely wonderful. Five-star material, not available anywhere else on the internet. Unique research that tells us things we've never known about stock investing. Things that are going to change the history of stock investing, in my opinion. But my favorite section of John's site is the letter section, because that's where he gets real people writing in and trying to understand why we know that the passive investing model has failed and why we know that we need to make a transition to the new rational investing model of understanding how stock investing works. And there was a fellow there today. I don't know the fellow's name. Maybe I should look it up. I'll try to look it up as I'm talking, if I'm able to. He's written at John's site. He's written several letters, and he's a good guy. He understands the basics, and he understands the research John has done. But he's a numbers oriented guy, and he's ran some numerical tests of his own. And Michael, I received this letter from Michael, and Michael, checks out what John says, which is exactly the right thing to do. He checks out and runs little tests of his own, and he's found some things that surprise him. They haven't caused him, to think that what John is saying is wrong, but they've surprised him. And so he's asked questions about it in a number of letters, and John responds, and of course, you get to see the back and forth, and that's what you need to deal with. If you're going to come to a informed understanding of how stock investing really works, that's what you need to do. You can't just listen to one person or one article or one podcast and say, "Yeah, that's it. I'm going to change everything I've always believed and switch over." You've got to hear enough to start opening your mind to some new ideas, and then your mind is going to have questions. One of the things we really have to look at in this making this transition from passive investing to rational investing is how the human mind works. There's a name for it in philosophy. I think it's called epistemology, the study of how humans learn. And that's our big problem. Our problem in stock investing is how humans learn. The way we learn as creatures, the way humans learn it's perfectly structured for us to fail at investing. That's sort of how I would say it, that our minds work in such a way so that over and over and over again, we invest in the worst possible way that could be imagined. So, you know, what's going on is that we have all these great brains trying to help us understand investing. All the people I talk about, you know, John Bogle, the head of the list, but all of them, John Bogle, Bernstein, Scott Burns, Jonathan Clements, these great brains, and they're, you know, they're good people, they're smart people, they're hardworking people, they're generous people. Send them emails. A lot of them will respond. You know, I've interacted with a good number of these people over the past 7 years. I send them emails, and they respond. They answer my questions. You know, they're great, but they're human, and they're subject to the same human frailties that all the rest of us are. And so they've gotten some things wrong. They've gotten passive investing wrong. I'm sure of that. And but they're taking all this mental energy and using it not to understand investing, but how to understand the opposite of what works. That all seems so messed up that it's hard to believe. It's hard to let in. But that's what's really going on. And so they're advising us, they're telling us the worst thing to do. And we're doing it. Most of us are doing it, or at least we have been, say from 1995 through the first part of 2008, we've been destroying ourselves. You know, bit by bit by bit, we've been falling into the trap deeper and deeper and deeper, destroying ourselves. And now today, you know, in the last 6 months, I see signs that we're trying to dig ourselves out of the trap. You know, we're trying to overcome this, but that's obviously, you know, a long-term effort. It's not going to happen in a day or a week or a month. But we need to, I want to persuade as many people as I can to the merits of the new model, and I want, in order to even get a hearing for the new model, I first got to bury passive investing, you know, because as long as passive investing is popular, it's impossible to discuss rational investing. The passive investing dogmatists simply can't stand it. They can't tolerate it. It makes them crazy. So we've got to at least get people willing to accept that passive investing might be wrong. You've at least got to get that far so that they'll give it a hearing. And then you've opened the door to just a flood of wonderful insights that have been developed by thousands of wonderful people over the course of the past 30 years, including the passive investing advocates, including, you know, John Bogle, again, at the head of the list. I say this all the time, he's Mr. Passive Investing. John Bogle's ideas have done more harm to middle-class investors than the ideas of any investing authority in the history of the United States. But John Bogle's ideas about investing have also done more good than the investing ideas of any investing authority in the history of the United States, because John Bogle is also a rational investor. Many of John Bogle's principles are rational investing principles. John Bogle got me started on the path I am on. So both things are so, as incredible as that is to believe or to let in. So what I want to do in this podcast is to explore a little bit how that could be. How could it be that the smartest investing experts are also the dumbest investing experts? The people who are doing the most to help us are also doing the most to undermine our success. How could that possibly be? How could good people be working so hard to cause such human misery? It just doesn't seem possible. Well, I saw as I mentioned in the last podcast, I have something I call X-ray vision. Now that I've been following the rational investing model for 7 years, or if you date it back to the mid-90s, which is when I really became a rational investor, although I didn't fully understand what I was becoming at the time, then it would be much longer. Then it would be, you know, 14 years, I guess. So I now have this thing I call X-ray vision. Any article I look at, I see things in it that other people don't see, because I'm seeing it from the standpoint of a confirmed believer in the rational investing model. So when I saw Michael's letter, things jumped out. John did a great job of responding. It was a wonderful response. It was a good question also. And John just went through the various facts. But then what I really liked, and I can't understand any of this, but at the bottom he says, because of your interest in mathematics, I have added this formalism. And he goes through like equations and stuff, you know, that prove why the data says what it says. And you know, I can't make heads or tails out of that stuff, but Michael can. Michael has a mathematics background, so he's going to appreciate that much more than I am. But I like it that John can do that. I think it's wonderful because that's part of it. That's part of our persuasion effort. It can't be all words. We've got to have the formalism. We've got to have the equations, the calculators, and all this sort of thing to cover all the bases. I tend to think the emotional side is more important, but I would, because that's my strength. But I think the mathematics stuff is also wonderful, and it certainly gives me confidence in what I believe just from thinking this through from a common sense standpoint, to see that the numbers support what common sense tells us. That gives me a lot more confidence than I would have if it were the other way around. Imagine if the historical data showed one thing and common sense showed something else. That would not lead to a lot of, you know, confidence. And that's the case with passive investing. You know, passive investors believe things with all their heart, mind, and soul. But when they look at the historical data says very, very, very different things. And, of course, the way they've addressed that is by coming up with analytically invalid methodologies. So that when passive investors look at the historical data, they always ignore the valuations factor. And by ignoring the valuations factor, you can come up with wildly wrong answers and put them into tables and dress it up as if it were science. And then that way, you sort of resolve that inner conflict. We all have a conflict. All passive investors have a conflict between common sense and passive investing. They're always in conflict. But when you can dress up the historical data in a certain way, slant it in a certain way, you can address that conflict for a time, only for the length of a wild bull market. And then once the wild bull market comes to an end, you have the problem that what's happening in the real world is consistent with what your common sense tells you and not at all consistent with what passive investing, your belief in passive investing tells you. Anyway, that's all by way of preface. I didn't want to address, John gave a great mathematics-oriented answer to Michael's question. But what I heard Michael asking is, he was examining, you can go to the website and look at Michael's question, but he was trying to understand why it is that, I don't recall exactly all the things he went through, but for example, if you look at safe withdrawal rates, safe withdrawal rate is the amount you can take out of a retirement plan. And the old school studies, the conventional approach, the passive investing approach says, oh, you can always take out 4% real. It's the safe withdrawal rate's a constant number. The new school studies, John's research says, no, the safe withdrawal rate changes in response to changes in valuation. So at times of low valuations, you can take out up to 9%. The safe withdrawal rate can go as high as 9%. At times of insanely high valuations, like we've seen in recent years, the safe withdrawal rate drops down to 2%, as low as 2%. So the safe withdrawal rate is not a constant number. It's always a changing number. And today it's back around 5%, I believe, the last time I checked, somewhere around 5%. So the old school studies understate the safe withdrawal rate today. But Michael was looking at, he noticed that if he looks at a 30-year, 30-year time period, that high stock allocations do very well. And he's a little baffled by that. He's saying, well, that doesn't, he understands the points that John is making at his website. But then he does this 30-year thing and he says, that seems odd. It seems odd to him. It seems counterintuitive. If the safe withdrawal rate can go down as low as 2%, you wouldn't think that the 30-year numbers would be good. It seems odd. And he's putting his finger on something that's very important. And as I thought about it, I wanted to place it in a broader context. I didn't just want to answer Michael's question. I wanted to address a bigger question. And my effort is always to persuade people of the merits of rational investing. That's what all this is about. That's what all these podcasts are about. So I try to, in every podcast, address a different aspect of that question, that persuasion effort. And one of the big questions we've got to address is, let's just say everything that, you know, John and I and all the hundreds of others who have contributed constructively over the course of the 7 year discussions, 7 years of discussions, have said. Let's just say it's all true. Passive investing is complete, total nonsense, dangerous, irresponsible, can never work. Rational investing is wonderful. It allows you to invest at, you know, get far bigger, far larger returns at far less risk. You know, in every possible way, rational investing is superior to passive investing. And I believe that's true. But let's say it's not just me saying it, but that an angel from heaven comes down and says, yes, that, you know, Rob's got it. That's it. The question that I feel is implicit in Michael's question, he didn't ask this, but I feel it's somehow implicit, is if that's so, well, and certainly other people have asked this in different ways, if that's so, why doesn't everybody know this? You know, you've got this wonderful approach to investing. Everybody wants to invest well, right? It's obviously in every single person's best interest to invest effectively. Are you the first person who happened to discover this? You know, Rob Bennett, you know, Farmer Hocus, you just walked along and discovered all this? That's a little far-fetched. And it is. It is extremely far-fetched. No one's more surprised than I am, believe me. It's frankly, it's impossible to believe. It's impossible to believe. I don't believe it. You know, I go back and I review the post archives of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate from time to time, and I look at earlier threads and I say, did this happen? Did these things actually happen? And I can't deny what the post archives say. All the things I describe happened. But yet, add it all together, and it's not believable. When I meet somebody new, you know, at a party or something, and I'm describing, or a picnic, I don't really go to parties all that often, more likely a picnic, or a little get-together. You know, I go to Christmas get-togethers, things like that, but I'm not really big on parties as a rule. But if I'm telling someone new, well, I had this experience. I mentioned it on an earlier podcast. I had this experience at Thanksgiving. My older brother, he's 10 years older. We were having Thanksgiving dinner together, and, you know, I was sort of talking about what you did during the year. We don't get together all that often. And, you know, I was sort of telling him about all this investing stuff. And, you know, of course, I listen to myself as I'm saying it. I'm sort of aware and thinking, this just sounds incredible. What I'm telling him just sounds unbelievable. And he had some skepticism, to be sure. This guy's, you know, related by blood, and he's got skepticism. So we have to address that. We can't just say this is better. Here's the common sense argument for why it's better. Here's all the historical data showing it. Here are all the experts who have endorsed the various principles. We can't. That's not enough. We've got to explain why no one has understood this until now. Now, it's not entirely true to say no one has understood it. Rational investing has been around since the beginning of time. So I haven't discovered anything new. John has not discovered anything new. But what happens is we forget what we learned at earlier times. And this is strange. This is a strange... I can't think of any other area of human endeavor in which this is so. I'll have to think about that harder and try to come up with a comparable. But in most areas of human endeavor, what happens is we learn certain things. You know, we build a foundation. Let's say in science, you know, I can't, you know, people talk. If you talk to a person who understands science today, it'll drive you nuts. They'll talk about physics principles or something, and I can't understand what they're talking about. But once upon a time, they started with these very, very basic principles. Isn't there a basic principle of science that energy cannot be created or destroyed. I think I've heard people say that energy cannot be created or destroyed. And it's just a basic principle. And there was a time when people didn't know that, and then they learned that. And then that allowed them to learn to build. And then they built, you know, they've learned incredible things today, things you couldn't imagine them learning at earlier times. But they learned it by building on these building blocks. And, you know, that's why perpetual motion machines don't work. Humans have spent countless hours of human energy trying to develop a perpetual motion machine. It appeals to us. We see that, you know, we look at cars and we say cars are great, but wouldn't it be great if you could make a car that just always ran? You didn't have to put gasoline in it. It just always ran. So people have tried to develop perpetual motion machines. But today, that's looked down upon because we know that energy cannot be created or destroyed. And thus, in order to make a machine run, you have to have an energy source. There's no other way. And I think there are still people today who try to come up with perpetual motion machines, but scientists say it can't be done. And I think they're right. And the same thing is true in investing. Except investing is at a very primitive level. We're at the level before the discovery that energy cannot be created or destroyed. We're still at the looking for a perpetual motion machine. We're at the fantasy level of understanding how investing works. Passive investing is a fantasy. Passive investing is it's the idea of a perpetual motion machine, that there could be a market somewhere on some alternate universe where valuations don't affect long-term returns. There is no such thing. There never can be such a thing. It's impossible. But it's an appealing fantasy. It's a fantasy that appeals to the human mind. And it's plausible. A perpetual motion machine is not entirely implausible. If you understand science, it's implausible. But if you never heard the principle that energy cannot be created or destroyed, or never understood it, then the idea of a perpetual motion machine doesn't seem so totally crazy. You know, there are toys. I've seen toys where they set them up and they move one direction, they move the other, and they almost look like they are perpetual motion machines. They will run for a long time. They eventually stop. Or a pendulum. You could think of a pendulum. You know, it'll keep going. So the idea of a perpetual motion machine is not, it's not really a crazy idea. It's a wrong, it is ultimately, but it doesn't, it seems plausible on first inspection. The same thing's true of passive, the idea of an efficient market. That seems plausible. It's not, it's crazy. But in order to understand why it's crazy, you have to look at valuations, and you have to come to understand how valuations affect long-term returns. And once you get there, you know it's crazy. A great example of this, I read this just the other day on a discussion board. Somebody was talking about Warren Buffett. And Warren Buffett had a great article he wrote many, many years ago, I think in the 1970s, about, I can't give you the title, but The Super Investors of Graham and Dodville, something like that. I don't have it quite right. But somebody just pulled a line out of it where Buffett said I can't quote this exactly right either. I'm just giving a vague impression of what it said. But he said something on the lines of, there are some people who understand that you have to look at prices, the prices of stocks. And he said, the people who get that get it instantly. And he said, there are other people who never get it, and you can explain it to them from now till doomsday, and they'll just never get it. Their minds cannot understand that valuations affect long-term returns. That's what he was talking about. He was talking about value investing, so he was talking about looking at the prices of individual securities, but it's the same concept. The question of whether price affects the result, whether valuations affect long-term returns. He said some people just get it, and some people don't. Buffett obviously gets it, but I think that comment tells me that he's a little bit cynical about the possibility of the general public ever getting it. He sort of has given up on the idea that the general public will ever get it, and I think that's part of the reason he endorses passive investing for the average person. He's just sort of, I think he's given up that the average person can ever invest effectively, truly effectively. And I think Buffett's wrong to give up, but I think he's right. He's right. And he gets his finger on something important when he says, this idea either clicks with people or it doesn't. My goal, the goal of all the work I do in this field, is to get it to click with more people. Because I think Buffett made a mistake in becoming too cynical. I understand where he's coming from. It certainly is true that getting people to understand this as hard can be. People do have a hard time with it. But I just don't think we have any choice. With the middle class investing its retirement money today in stocks, we're just asking for a disaster if we don't explain to people the ABCs of how stock investing works. If it's hard, if it's easy, if it's in the middle, doesn't make any difference. We've got to do it. There's just no getting around it. And the disaster that we're living through today, that's the result of us not making a more serious effort to explain the ABCs of investing to middle-class investors and to, frankly, to the investing experts as well. They also need to understand the ABCs. You can't give investing advice if you don't understand the ABCs of the subject you're talking about. And the fact that valuations affect long-term returns is the most fundamental point that anyone needs to know about investing before they do it. I don't think anyone should invest a dollar in stocks until they understand that valuations affect long-term returns, and that means that passive investing is literally impossible. It not only has it never worked in history, it never can work. It's not even possible for the human mind to imagine how passive investing could ever work in the real world. So says Rob Bennett. Now, So the question here that I'm trying to get at is, why is it so hard for people to understand this? What is the block? You know, Buffett is right that there's a block. Well, what is that block? If we figure out what the block is, well, maybe we'll be able to address it. Maybe we'll be able to overcome it. We can't just give up. We can't just throw our hands up and say, it's too hard. We've got to figure out what that block is. And I think that Michael's question was sort of getting at that block a little bit. Because Michael was saying valuations seem to matter sometimes and then other times they don't. It doesn't hold together. And the reason I think that rang a bell with me is that I went through that process. I've been learning about how stock investing works in real time on the internet, in public. You know, I put up the first post of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate on May 13th, 2002. I've put up, you know, many tens of thousands of posts since, and I've had hundreds of thousands of posts directed at me commenting on these ideas. And, you know, I've had to sort through it in public. And there's been times it's been a little scary because I try never to say anything I'm not reasonably confident is right. But, I didn't have all the pieces in the early days. So sometimes we would discover things and I'd say, yeah, that's really exciting. And it's clearly right because it made sense. The historical data backed it up. I knew it was right, but I couldn't quite figure out how it fit into the big picture. And that made me uneasy. And then a lot of that I would have on those sorts of questions, I would have email correspondence with John Walter Russell. And we'd go back and forth. And eventually, you know, we'd sort of come to an understanding of where things stood. Sometimes it took a while. Sometimes we had to pull back and say, we'll leave it aside for 6 months and we'll come back to this one because we can't quite get a hold on it. That's what I read. I'm reading a lot into poor Michael's question. Michael didn't say any of this. I'm reading all this into it. But I do think that that's sort of what he was getting at if you really examine it. And the truth of the matter is that all of our work has led us to believe, as of, you know, the last day of 2008, December 31st, 2008, that the reality is the title of this podcast, At first, valuations don't matter at all. Then they matter big bunches. Then they don't matter at all again. Now, that sounds like crazy talk. That is the truth. And it's because that's the truth that the human mind has such a hard time letting this in, I believe. So what does that mean? Well, you know, why do I say this? Why is it that at first valuations don't matter at all? Then they matter big bunches. Then they don't matter at all again. Well, the discovery that caused all this trouble is that first part, the first part of that three-part statement. The first part is, at first, valuations don't matter at all. That is passive investing. You see, passive investing, the efficient market theory, you know, it's all sort of the same thing. It's a group of concepts. The root idea, if you had to boil it all down, there's different ways of approaching it. There's different root ideas, but one root idea, and I think this is the root idea that most average investors hold to, is that timing is impossible. Timing doesn't work. That's the way they say it. Timing doesn't work. Timing the market doesn't work. How many times have you heard that? People used to believe that timing worked, and they used to try to time the market. They used to say, you know, is it going to be good the next year? Is it going to be bad? And of course, there are people that still do that today. But the passive investors don't. And the passive investors are dominant today, and the passive investors have academic research on their side. So they have the high ground today, at least until before the price crash, they did. They still sort of do, but they're losing it. They're losing it as we speak. Timing doesn't work. What led them to believe that timing doesn't work? These smart people, smartest people around, how did the smartest people around come to believe that timing doesn't work? How did they come to believe such a thing? I have to start by saying it's an incredibly counterintuitive statement. There's a reason why people have always believed timing would work. There's a reason why people have always tried to time the market. Not that they're dumb. People aren't dumb. Why did these millions of people, you know, for hundreds of years, thousands of years, believe that it was possible to time? Why did nobody know that timing didn't work until Eugene Fama came along in the 1960s? How did that happen? That's the first question we have to answer in trying to understand why we have such a hard time letting the realities in today. All right. Why? Why did they think timing would work? Because all the timing is considering price. When you buy a car, you don't buy a car without asking what the price is, do you? There's sort of a two-step process. You look at what sort of car is right for you. You know, if you're young and you're not married, maybe you get a red convertible. You know, you look at that. You look at the red convertible type cars. And, you know, if you've got a big family, maybe you get a station wagon, you know, because you need a lot of seating room. Or, you know, if you have to take your kids to football practice all the time, maybe you get a van because you've got to be able to carry a lot of stuff with you. Or, you know, whatever it happens to be. First, you decide, what sort of car am I in the market for? You identify some possibilities. Then, you know, at least 50% of the job is, how do I get good value for my money? Of the people who make that type of car, who's offering the best deal? And even once you narrow it down to a particular model and make, then you go to dealers and you say, you know, what kind of deal will you offer me? A lot of people are asking, you know, $30,000 for this car. Are you willing to give it to me for $28,000? So price always comes into consideration. If we were to believe that timing didn't work, that's as much as saying price doesn't matter. If timing doesn't work, you're going to buy stocks no matter what the price, which is just what passive investors tell you. They say, what do they call it? This thing where you buy, you know, every paycheck, you have a certain amount of money go into stocks, dollar cost averaging. That's a passive investing concept. That's buying stocks no matter what the price. You don't even have to look at the price. You just buy. The theory is if you buy every 2 weeks, you know, when you get your paycheck, sometimes you'll be buying at a low price, sometimes you'll be buying at a high price. It'll all work out in the end. Because price doesn't really matter all that much to the passive investor. And the reason price doesn't matter, no one would say price doesn't matter. And I've talked to the most dogmatic passive investors alive. And, you know, if I say to them, do you think price matters? They say, oh, yeah, price matters. And I say, okay, price matters. Interesting. I say, how much do you change your stock allocation when prices go to insane levels? Oh, I don't change my stock. Never, never, never. That timing. That's timing. Timing doesn't work. Timing doesn't work. Timing doesn't work. I say, okay, prices matter. Timing doesn't work. I see what you're getting at there. You know, this is the problem. This is the communications problem. Passive investors believe two opposite things. They believe that prices matter, and they believe the timing doesn't work, and the two ideas are in direct conflict. This is the problem. This is why I say that no passive investor can ever be confident of his investing strategy, because all passive investors have common sense. And common sense tells you that this is insane. So no passive investor can ever be confident in a long-term sense. They're very, very, you know, they're full of bravado during huge bull markets when the outside world seems to be confirming the insane investing strategy. But once the outside world stops confirming the insane strategy, they start thinking, wait a minute, this is insane. Why am I doing it? So they've got a problem. Okay, so the natural thing to believe is the timing works. The natural thing is to think that prices matter and the timing works. And for many, many years, that's what people believed. Quite naturally. Everything's hunky-dory. But then along comes passive investing. Or along comes the efficient market theory. And that eventually became passive investing. The efficient market theory says, no. Timing doesn't work. Now, how did smart people come to believe that? What happened is they did studies. They checked it out. They didn't just offer opinions. They didn't just say, I think it works. Duh, you know. I don't. You know, that's what a lot of investing advice is. It's just people giving their subjective opinions, and it goes round and round in circles, and it means absolutely nothing. The efficient market theory people went above all that. They actually checked the numbers. They checked the data. And they said, okay, let's look at the data. These people are saying they think timing's a good idea. Does it work? Let's check. And lo and behold, the data showed that it does not. It does not work. They produced a great amount of evidence. Many, many academic studies show this. That's why so many people believe in passive investing today. Because they check the data, and the data tells them it doesn't work. A lot of those people believed in timing at earlier times in their life, and they got burned because timing doesn't work. Short-term timing doesn't work. They got burned, and then they said, hey, here's a guy doing a study, and he's telling me timing doesn't work, and my life experience supports that. And now I've got data, and I figured it out. Eureka, I know the answer. The answer is passive investing. The answer is timing doesn't work. That's what happened. Okay. So, efficient market theory is good, right? Passive investing is good. It's the answer, right? No. It's not the answer. People jumped to an unwarranted conclusion. There is a big stack of academic research showing that timing doesn't work. But in every one of those studies, what they are looking at is short-term timing. Short-term timing is you look at the stock market today, you know, and you say, things look bad. Businesses are closing. People are getting thrown out of their houses. Things are bad, and it looks like they're going to get worse. 2008 was a bad year, but 2009. Oh, looks worse. I'm getting out. That's what doesn't work. It's what a lot of people are doing today. People are giving up on passive investing, and instead of moving forward to rational investing, they're moving backward to the pre-passive investing model, which is timing the market, short-term timing. Instead of moving forward, a lot of people are moving backward. I don't have much hope for that idea, because what the efficient market theory people said, what the passive investing people said, is true. Short-term timing doesn't work. That was a huge advance. We should be grateful to Eugene Fama and John Bogle and Burton Malkiel, all these people that taught us this important lesson of investing. Short-term timing doesn't work. Unfortunately, they jumped to an unwarranted conclusion. Instead of saying short-term timing doesn't work, which would have been the right way of putting it, they didn't know this at the time. They just thought timing was timing. They didn't know. They said timing doesn't work. Well, the second part of my three-part statement is, the first part is first valuations don't matter at all. The second part is then they matter big bunches. Short-term timing doesn't work, but long-term timing sure does. Long-term timing isn't saying things look bleak for 2009, I'm getting out. Long-term timing is very, 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 very different. Long-term timing is things look bleak. Things look bleak for 2009. Should I get out? I wonder. I know what I'll do. I'll look at the PE10 level. Because the PE10 level is a good valuation assessment tool. And valuations determine long-term stock performance. So I'm not going to even worry about what happens in 2009. I don't care. I'm a long-term investor. My friends at the Vanguard Diehards Board, they say, I don't know and I don't care about what happens in 2009. Makes no difference to me because I'm not investing for 1 year. I'm investing for 5 years or 10 years or 15 years or 20 years. So I look at the P10 level, and the P10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Historically, when we're at a P10 level of 15, the most likely 10-year return, not 1-year return, the most likely 10-year return is 6% real. Stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition. I ain't getting out. Maybe I got out in 1995 when stocks went to insane levels, and I stayed out until early 2000, through the first part of 2008, because I didn't want to lose all my retirement money in a price crash. Maybe I did that. But now that they're back, now that stocks are again offering a strong long-term value proposition, I'm not getting out, I'm getting in. You see, long-term timing leads you to do the opposite of what short-term timing leads you to do. It's a totally opposite way of looking at things. So when Malkiel and Bogle and all these other people, Fama, advocated passive investing, that's not what they should have been doing. What they should have been doing is saying, hey, we believe in looking at data. We believe in learning, what really works. We're not into this subjective, just give your opinion. We're into backing up what we say with research. What they should have been doing was saying, short-term timing doesn't work, long-term timing does work. Because all the data that shows that short-term timing doesn't work shows that long-term timing has always worked. No exceptions, not a single exception in the historical record. Always it has worked. Long-term timing always provides better long-term risk-adjusted returns. Always. Okay? So first valuations don't matter at all. Another way of saying that is short-term timing doesn't work. Then they matter big bunches. That's another way of saying that is long-term timing does work. And third part of my three-part sentence is, then they don't matter at all again. Huh? You just told us long-term timing works. Now you're saying, then they don't matter. Then valuations don't matter at all again. Huh? Rob, you're going to make us dizzy. You're sending us around in circles. Do valuations matter or don't they? Come on, man. You're telling us first they matter, then first they don't matter, then they matter, then they don't matter again. What is this, a circus? It's a merry-go-round? Well, I'm telling you what the data tells us, and if you're going to invest, if you're going to follow passive investing, you're already saying you believe in looking at historical data, because that's where passive investing comes from. And I'm saying if you're going to look at the historical data, why not look at it accurately? Why not look at what it actually says? What it actually says is valuations don't matter at all in the short term. Short-term timing doesn't work. They do matter big bunches, going 10 years out, 15 years out, 20 years out, 25 years out. But go 30 years out, they don't matter again. That's what the data shows. And there are statistical tests for this. You know, there are statistical tools that people use. They call it R-squared, you know. Go to John's site if you want to know about that stuff, not Rob's site. But there are statistical tools. And the statistical tools, John and I have a calculator called the Stock Return Predictor. And it'll tell you the most likely return you will get on an investment in a broad U.S. index fund 10 years out. Now, why don't we tell people what they'll get 3 years out? I'll tell you that there'd be a lot more interest in our calculator if we did. That's what people really, really, really want to know. They want to know that what they really want to know is what will I get in 1 year. They want a calculator that'll tell them in 1 year. There's a reason why John and I don't have 1 year, you know, covered in that calculator. Why? Because it can't be done. Nobody knows what's going to happen in 1 year. So we don't bother giving predictions that won't work. And the statistical tools tell us this. If you look at the R squared numbers, which tells you how predictable the returns are, at 5 years out, there's a tiny bit of predictability, but it's not really statistically significant. So I think it would be misleading. You know, we could give those numbers, but in certain contexts, I might be willing to tell you those numbers. But as a general rule, we didn't include it in the calculator because as a general rule, it's not statistically significant. The numbers just aren't, they're not good enough. At 10 years, the numbers are good enough to report. It's valuable information at 10 years. It's a broad range of returns, frankly. If you look at the stock return predictor at the website, you'll see that at 10 years, we give you the most likely return, and we give you the return that is 80% likely to come up, and we give you the return that is unlikely. You know, we give different points on the spectrum. We assign the odds, and that's very, very valuable information. But if you look at the range of possibilities, it's pretty broad at 10 years. You know, at 15 years, the predictability is very strong, amazingly strong. I forget the exact number, but it was something like the predictability at 15 years is something like 74%, which I find astounding. And at 20 years, it was 78%, just under 80%. So I really think I'm going to do a separate podcast on this question of risk, but people think that stock investing is risky. This is common, and there was an article in Money Magazine. It's driving me crazy when I think about it because they set it up. So I did a podcast on it, but two or three back, and they set it up perfectly. They say, look, people aren't believing the BS anymore. All the passive investing marketing slogans aren't working. Maybe we're going to have to admit we got some things wrong, which is, you know, just what I want them to say, that they would acknowledge what they got wrong. But then they ruin it by saying, oh, what we got wrong is stock investing turns out to be a lot more risky than we thought. No, that's not right. Stock investing is less risky than you thought, not more. If stock returns, the efficient market theory tells us that stock returns are not predictable. That's what it tells us. That's why we don't time the market, because returns are not predictable. But that ain't what the data says. What the data says is 20 years out, returns are 80% predictable. So compare the rational investing model to the passive investing model. And the passive investing model is 5 times more risky. If you're going to say that with rational investing, your returns are 80% predictable, which is what the data tells us, to go from 80% predictable to 0% predictable, that's 4 times. 4 times is, you know, 4 times, 4 times more safe, 4 times more predictable. So the risk of passive investing is far, far, far higher. What you're doing when you become a passive investor is you're just closing your eyes to the realities. You're saying, I am going to pretend that I can't predict stock returns and thereby cause myself to lose massive amounts of money for no good reason whatsoever, except that I don't want to admit that passive investing has failed. I just don't want to acknowledge it. That's what's going on. But you see, the reason that's happening is because we started out thinking in the pre-passive investing era, we thought that stock returns were predictable. We thought that timing worked. And we had this huge finding that timing does not work. Short-term timing does not work. And that was indeed a huge finding. It's wonderful. But then we jumped to this unwarranted conclusion that there's only one kind of timing, short-term timing, and there is nothing else. So we got the first part of this three-part sentence right. First, valuations don't matter at all. That part we got right. But then we failed to notice the second part, that then valuations matter big bunches. From the time period from 5 years to 25 years, valuations is the whole ball game. If you don't understand how valuations affect long-term returns, you don't have a clue what you're doing. You don't understand the ABCs of investing. And that's John Bogle. Sorry to say, but that's John Bogle. He doesn't have a clue. I don't say that to be mean. I say that because I want him to change the advice he's giving. I want him to turn this thing around. I have the greatest respect and affection for John Bogle for the fact that he got the first part right. He helped us all. But he got that second part terribly, 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 terribly wrong. And we've got to turn him around, or we're all going to go over a cliff. 5 years out, 10 years out, not so much 5 years, but a little bit. 10 years out, certainly. 15 years out, 20 years out. Valuations matter big bunches. Valuations are the whole ball game. You want to go with a high stock allocation when the long-term return is likely to be good. You want to go with a low stock allocation when the long-term return is likely to be bad. So you must time the market. You must. It's not optional. It's required for long-term investors. Short-term investors, do whatever you please. Nothing I say has any relevance for short-term investors. It's all aimed at long-term investors. But for long-term investors not to time the market is insane. There's no argument that can be made for it. And passive investing is a long-term strategy, not a short-term strategy. So if you're going to, if you buy into the idea of buy and hold, which is a long-term strategy, you've got to time the market. It just cannot be done otherwise. You're increasing your risk factor by 5 times. You know, the risk factor is 20% for rational investors. That's what can't be predicted. And for passive investors, it's 100%, 5 times. 5 times. And the third part of the three-part sentence is, then they don't matter at all again. Valuations don't matter at all again. Well, that's at 30 years. So look at the stock return predictor. And you'll see that we give the likely return at 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, and 60 years. If you go from 0 to 10, stocks become predictable. At 0, they're totally unpredictable. 5, they're slightly predictable, but not enough to make it worth talking about. At 10, they're predictable, reasonably predictable. At 20, they're very predictable. At 30, now at 30 years, stock returns are highly predictable. So I'm not saying they're not predictable at 30. They're more predictable at 30 than they are at 20. Stock returns become more predictable the farther you go out, except, of course, if the entire economy collapses, in which case, you know, all bets are off. But assuming that the economy continues functioning, they become more and more predictable as time goes on. But valuations become a less important factor as time goes on. See, at 30 years, if you're investing, there's a sense in which all the passive investing stuff is correct. When they say you don't have to look at valuations, stocks for the long run, stick with stocks, you'll end up doing fine. That is a true statement if you're willing to go 30 years out. Then it becomes true. The problem with that is it's totally unrealistic to think you're going to go 30 years out. Tell me a person who's going to suffer the kind of losses people are suffering today and not do anything. They're going to be down, you know, from where they would have been had they invested in super safe asset classes for 20 years, 25 years, and they're never going to make a change. You know, theoretically, somebody could do that, but I doubt there's anyone in the history of investing who has ever done such a thing. It's all just, you know, ivory tower, egghead stuff. It has nothing to do with the real world. It's all just nonsense. Investors, you know, it's good to be a long-term investor. I'm all for it. But 30 years, I'm gonna put my money in an asset class that's going to give me a poor return for 20, 25 years? And I'm going to wait for the payoff at the end of 30 years? No. 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 It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. What I need to know is, you know, long term means 10 years. I need to know, you know, the choice is always between stocks and, let's say, TIPS, you know, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, a government, you know, an asset class with a government guarantee attached to it, as safe as you can get. January of 2000, the most likely 10-year return on stocks was a negative 1% annual. The most likely annual real return was a negative 1%. So putting your money in stocks meant the odds were you'd have less money at the end of 10 years on an inflation-adjusted basis. You were putting your money into an asset class that was, in all likelihood, going to diminish your wealth over time, over the long term. Put your money in TIPS, and well, it wasn't a most likely return, it was a guaranteed return of 4.1%. So the difference was 5% real every year for 10 years. Well, earning a difference of 5% real over 10 years in a row is going to make a huge difference. It'll allow you to retire 5 years sooner, making moves like that. You don't want to have much of your money in stocks when they're giving a negative long-term return. It just makes no sense. But say you put your money in stocks in January of 2000 and you leave it there for 30 years. How will you do then? Well, the stock return predictor will tell you the answer to that question. Leave it in there for 30 years. My recollection is the 30-year most likely return was 5.4% real, annualized. That's better than TIPS. TIPS were 4.1. So stocks beat TIPS, even at the worst valuation levels we've ever seen in history, if you go 30 years out, you see? So the way it works is that first valuations don't matter at all, then they matter big bunches, then they don't matter at all again. Now, I think the last question we should address is, why is this so? The point I make is the problem we're having in getting people to understand this is it seems sort of counterintuitive. First, valuations don't matter at all. Then they matter big bunches. Then they don't matter at all again. What's going on? What's going on is it's the interaction of the two. There are two gigantic forces that affect stock investing. And these forces are as different as night and day. They're polar opposites. The one force is economic realities. And the second force is human emotion. And stock investing is, understanding stock investing is understanding how these two forces meld together. And they're opposites. So that's why you get counterintuitive results. You don't get, you know, if it was only one force, it would always be the same. If all you had to look at was, if the only thing that applied were the economic realities, everything the passive investing people say would be true. It would work just the way they say. If all that mattered was emotion, it would be pure gambling. You would just be gambling. It would be like betting on a roulette wheel. You know, you would not, I wouldn't be involved. You wouldn't want to use the stock market to, finance your retirement if it was pure emotion. Because emotion is unpredictable. You have no way of knowing what's going to happen. So it's just a pure gamble. But what's really going on is that we're mixing. Stock investing is a mix of gambling, 100% gambling, and 100% economic realities, investing in businesses that generate profits and that have a good track record of doing so. So you've got the most prudent thing you could put your money in mixed in with the most dangerous thing, and it all gets melded together. So now you've got to decide, do I want to gamble? Do I want to invest in something that is pure gambling? Well, no is the answer to that one. Do I want to invest in something that is very prudent, investing in the long-term economic gains of all the companies in the U.S. economy? Yes, that's wonderful. A proven track record? Stocks, you know, the best asset class out there. So what is it? It's both. It's both the most reckless, insane, irresponsible investment class imaginable, and also the most prudent, the most proven, the best track record, the best long-term return. It's both. It's two investment classes in one. Like certs. So what do you do? What's the responsible person do? What I say to do is look at the valuation level that applies on the day you're making the purchase. And the valuation level tells you how much is it real? How much is the stock market today a real thing, sharing in profits of businesses? And how much is it pure gambling? And the PE10 level tells you that. That's what it's for. At today's price level, we're at fair value. So there's none of this gambling element involved. There's obviously, in the short term there is. In the short term, there absolutely is. Stocks could fall 50% over the next year. When I say there's a strong long-term value proposition, I'm not telling you anything whatsoever about the short term. I don't know, and I don't care. But I truly don't know. But in 10 years, I can tell you that the odds are you're going to get a good return on your money. If you hold for 10 years, in the long term, the value proposition is good at today's prices. Because you're not buying this gambling stuff. You're not buying this emotion stuff. You're not buying this cotton candy stuff. Not at today's prices. Now, if you asked me 15 months ago, I'd say you're buying 50% cotton candy, 50% real. So you're a gambler. You know, if you went with a 20% stock allocation, 30% stock allocation, I'd say that's fine. A year ago, 2 years ago, you're buying an economic reality, which is good and prudent, and you're also gambling. You're doing both in a reasonable proportion. If you've only got 20% of your life savings in it, I think that's reasonable, despite the gambling component, because you want to be involved in that real component. You don't want to give that up. But some people were invested 60% in stocks or 70% in stocks or, heaven help us all, 80% in stocks, or heaven help us all even more, 100% in stocks. I know people from discussion boards that were 100% in stocks and thought they were prudent, thought they were responsible. They believed in passive investing. They believed this stuff. They believed it would all work out in the long run. Well, that's a bad idea in Rob Bennett's view. So why is it that first valuations don't matter at all, then they matter big bunches, then they don't matter at all again? Well, the reason is they don't matter at all for the first the first year or two or three or four, because in the short term, stock prices are determined by human emotion. It's unpredictable. That's why all the studies show that short-term timing doesn't work, because nobody knows what's going to happen in 2009. You can sure get a lot of opinions on the internet, thousands of them. You want to read them all? You want to make sense of them all? Nobody knows. So my advice is stop wasting your time reading all that junk. And I learned that from John Bogle. God bless the man for teaching me that lesson. Because that's important, and that's basic, and that's true. It stands up to scrutiny. People have checked it out, and it stands up to scrutiny. Okay, then. Well, then why is it then that stock returns become predictable after a little bit after 5 years and to a statistically significant extent at 10 years? And then at an incredible extent at 15 years and 20 years. Why? Because there is an efficient market. The efficient market isn't instantaneous. It doesn't come into effect in the short term. But over time, the market is trying to pull prices back to fair value, always. If prices didn't eventually go back to fair value, the market would collapse. The market has to set things at fair value in the long term. So when, our human emotions let things go nutso, the market resists that. Sometimes it takes a long time for the market to win out, but it always wins out. It's like an ocean or a mountain. You're not going to beat it. When they say you can't beat the market, they're wrong in an important sense, but they're right in a sense too. The market's going to crush you. If you think you're going to get away without looking at valuations, the market is going to crush you dead. Because the market doesn't care, how emotional you get. The passive investing dogmatists are the most emotional people in the face of planet Earth. The market doesn't care. They can scream and they can holler and, they can threaten to kill people and on and on and on. It doesn't even faze the market. The market's going to do what markets do. And what markets do is they return prices to fair value over time. So you want to buy stocks when they're priced at 3x fair value, go ahead and do it. But the market's going to crush you. Doesn't care if it hurts. They always say, Rob, you're so mean. You're telling us that the market's going to go down. Well, Rob, you're mean. You're a meanie, Rob. You're scaring us, Rob. Our tummy's hurt. Well, fine. You don't want to listen to Rob Bennett tell you. You don't want to listen to the historical data tell you. Just wait and see how you feel when the market crushes your hopes of retiring someday. The market is the meanie, not Rob Bennett. The market is the meanie. Reality is the meanie, the reality principle. The reality principle says when you buy stocks valued at 3x fair value, you're jumping into the ocean in the middle of a hurricane and no lifeguards. You're going to get killed. The meanies are the people who tell you to do it. The meanies are the people that say, stocks for the long run. Buy and hold, timing doesn't work. They're the meanies. They're not intentionally being mean. They don't know that they're meanies. But by filling your head up with these fantasies, they're hurting you. And the people who tell you what the historical data says are trying to protect you. They're not meanies. It's because of the efficient market that valuations matter big bunches in the long term. Then you get to this 30-year out time period, and then valuations don't matter. Well, the market continues. The efficient market continues to make returns more predictable, even at 30 years, even at 40, 50 years, 60 years. Increasingly, the market becomes more and more efficient, returns become more and more predictable. But at that point, valuations don't matter so much anymore because, you see, after 30 years, we've had enough of a mix of overvaluation and undervaluation that what really matters is the underlying economic realities. All the emotion stuff is sort of boiled out of the mix at that point. It sort of doesn't matter anymore. If you go 30 years out, everything the passive investing people say is true. Because what matters then is the economic realities. As long as our economy continues producing, you know, as it has in the past, that 6.5% real return is gonna show up. Now, as I say, when you buy it January of 2000, you didn't actually, you know, the most likely return at 30 years is not 6.5, it's 5.4. But for practical purposes, that's close enough. It beats everything else out there, so you want to have most of your money in stocks. But the trouble with passive investing is you're going to be so crushed at 20 years, you're never going to make it to 30. You know, to get to 30, you've got to get past 10 and 15 and 20 and 25. There's no way to get there. We don't live 30 years in the future. We live in the here and now. So we have to give investing advice that works in the real world for real people. And people just can't suffer these kind of losses and stay fully invested in stocks. So you've got to let people know when to lower their stock allocations. And PE10 tells us that. It tells us, you know, when the ocean is safe to swim in and when it's death. You know, they've got flags at, you know, Cape May, New Jersey. When you go out, they've got a green flag for when it's safe to swim around. And they've got, you know, yellow flag, you know, when it's sort of risky. And they've got a green flag for when it's, you know, all systems go. Well, that's what PE10 level is. PE10 tells you, you know, the prices that applied from 95 through the first part of 2008 is a red flag, you know. Maybe dip your toe in the water. Go to a 20% allocation, but don't go out into the deep waves. You're going to get killed. But today, you know, maybe it's yellow. You know, yellow verging on green. It's the price level is good. There's still very choppy waters in the short term, but the long-term value proposition is sound. So what I'm trying to get at in this podcast, I hope, maybe I spent too much time on some points, but it's a counterintuitive phenomenon. The reality is counterintuitive. That first valuations don't matter at all, then they matter big bunches, then they don't matter at all again. But that's the reality. That's what the historical data tells us. And what the passive investing people did was they discovered the first part of that three-part series, and the first part was a huge advance. And the third part is also totally consistent with passive investing. So they discovered the first part and the third part, but they missed the second part. That was the huge error. And that error has caused all the problems. That error caused the huge bull market of the 90s, and then it caused the, you know, the bone-crushing losses that we've experienced for the past 10 years and that we may be experiencing for another 5 years or so. Now, if we wise up as a collective, as a community, we don't need to suffer any further losses if we wise up. But if we continue to believe in passive investing, we likely will be crushed even more because passive investing is 100% emotional, and emotion will likely cause this market to go a lot lower. What we need is to get the big name leaders out there, you know, reassuring people by letting them know that stock investing isn't nearly as dangerous as passive investing makes it out to be. Passive investing increases the risk, you know, by 5 times. So yes, you can go back into the market. Yes, you can count on good long-term returns. But no, not if you're a passive investor. If you still believe in passive investing, my advice is get out of stocks entirely and just spend a year learning the ABCs and then get back in. And then the returns you will receive for many years to come will make it well worth the learning experience you've been put through. Good luck with your investing strategies. You take care.